Committee on Budget to order for July 14, 2005. Number of items on our work session only agenda. We'll start out with House Bill 5139A. Thank you. The Parks and Recreation Department Natural Resources Subcommittee, but with a guest appearance by Senator Gorley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I don't mind covering for my neighbor on the third floor. House Bill 5139 is the agreed-upon budget bill for the Oregon State Parks and Recreation Department. The Parks and Recreation Department manages the state's campgrounds, day use areas, and waysides. In addition, the department operates programs relating to ocean shores, scenic rivers, recreational trails, and historic preservation. The Education and Natural Resources Subcommittee approved a total budget of $187.8 million and 557.95 FTE. The governor's recommended budget is increased by $21.5 million and 18.34 FTE. Technical adjustments totaling $207,918 were made as a result of reductions in the Attorney General rate. Department of Administrative Services assessments and an adjustment in services and supplies also occurred. The budget reflects increases to staff, four new parks, Harris Canyon, I hope that's correct, Fort Yamhill State Heritage Area, Thompson's Mills State Heritage Site, and Crissy Field State Recreation Site. There's also an increase to implement the Ocean Shore Management Plan and Habitat Conservation Plan to focus on managing natural resource issues through the use of salmon license plate revenues to enhance facility investments, local park grants, and land acquisitions to expand heritage conservation through property surveys, larger museum grants, and planning for the Oregon Sesquicentennial. The budget reflects increases to defease the 1998 lottery-backed bond, which will save $3.2 million in future biennia, and transfer the Oregon State Fair to Oregon Parks and the Recreation Department. Budget notes directing the department to develop a strategic plan to guide the acquisition of new properties, establish an interim work group to assist in the transfer of the Oregon State Fair to the State Parks and Recreation Department, review of the use and marketing of the state fairgrounds, and a review of the Oregon State Fair positions were adopted. Those were all budget notes. The subcommittee approved 13 performance measures and added 5 measures relating to grant administration, customer service, and fee waivers, modified 4 and eliminated 3 measures. And, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 5139 be reported out due pass.
Thank you very much, Senator. I appreciate the help there. Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for not mentioning this to you earlier. This is not a courtesy vote. This is simply an indeterminate vote. I recognize that you have only 6 members here. You need 6 members to pass anything out. I'll be voting aye at this time. It's not necessarily a courtesy vote, but I want to make some determination on this issue about the transfer of the state fair.
Very good. Further discussion?
I'll
probably even vote yes.
Senator Winters.
And I want to further state it. This particular issue, and as you know, I've wrestled with this for several sessions, and I commend the need of providing some stability and permanent funding, but there's inside of this, I want to look at all of the issues and ramifications. And I also want to go on record as recognizing the work of the committee in trying to grapple with trying to find sustainable funding for the fair. But I think there's some issues inside of this. But I will be your vote aye on this.
Thank you. Further discussion. Senator Bates.
Real quick. I'm sorry I wasn't here at the beginning. I was tied up with a constituent. Not tied up talking to this issue. We had a long discussion this morning about this, of course, and this has been an ongoing discussion about the state fair situation. The nexus is through the Heritage part of Parks and Rec. We have a long discussion about better management out there, which we think Parks and Recs can bring to it, which would be a savings, less administrative costs, which would be a savings, and whether or not long-term we want to continue to take care of the debt through Parks and Rec, or in the next plan, and we revisit this and see if there's a better way of handling that debt. The debt load for this organization is 20-25% of their annual budget. With that kind of a debt load, it's extremely hard for them to break even. And until that debt load is dealt with in some way, there continue to be a struggle and be in the red. And we understand that. We understand the issues. And if we had a viable way of maintaining the state fair other than this program, I would be the first to vote for it. I don't see any other viable program. I think we need to do this. I think the state fair needs to be maintained. It's an important part of what Oregon is all about. And I think we have to go there and maintain it. And this is the best we can do right now. We can revisit it in a couple of years and see if we're making progress and what's happening to the next biennium. They'll be reporting back to us steadily through this program. I think it'll be an opportunity to see if Parks and Rec Administration can make it function better, and a long-term discussion about what we do with that debt.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Objections? Seeing none. So ordered. Senate Bill 5630, the methamphetamine budget package. Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, thanks, sir.
Colleagues, Senate Bill 5630.
I'm sorry, go right in, Senator.
This is a very important measure, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to have colleagues. Thank you. Senate Bill 5630 is the funding bill for the Senate component of the legislature's comprehensive meth package designed to provide a combined prevention, treatment, and punishment approach on this significant problem. This bill is a companion to Senate Bill 907, which makes a number of policy changes, including creating or modifying a number of crimes relating to the manufacture, possession, or distribution of meth and its precursors. Senate Bill 5630 provides $1.5 million general fund to the Department of Corrections to fund the increased number of offenders anticipated from changes in Senate Bill 907. In addition, $900,000 is appropriated to the Department of Corrections for transitional housing and substance abuse treatment for participants of the alternative incarceration programs who are released into the community. The Department of Justice's District Attorney Assist Program is appropriated almost $600,000 to fund positions to provide investigation and prosecution assistance to district attorneys and law enforcement agencies. The changes in Senate Bill 907 and the increased prosecution resources in this bill is anticipated to increase the demand for indigent defense services, so the Public Defense Services Commission is provided $450,000 to fund this increased demand. I recommend, Mr. Chair, that Senate Bill 5630 be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Very good, Senator. This is indeed a great piece of legislation. Hopefully one of the great and better things we do this session. Discussion by committee members?
Mr. Chairman. Oh.
Senator Gordley.
I would like to acknowledge the presence and the remarkable leadership of Senator Jenny Burdick. And I know that she would also want to acknowledge the leadership of Representative Krieger, Senator Beyer. There's another representative involved, and I'm blanking on
McPherson.
Thank you very much. Again, a collaborative effort. Remarkable leadership provided by all of these good folks, and it's also a reflection of the work of a lot of other wonderful folks who worked with them in as partners to develop the package that's before the committee.
My own two cents. I'll reiterate, because I also really very impressed with the great work Senator did, and also her staff, Heidi. I'd also think that John and Doug in the fiscal office did an outstanding job of coming up with a great way to make sure that all the priorities that were identified in the policy committee could be hopefully funded at some point in time, and frankly, most of them right up front. So it's pretty exciting, good piece of work.
And Joe O'Leary is seated there next to Senator Burdick, another great staffer and fine contribution.
Very good.
Senator
Carter?
I wanted to say ditto because I was about to give kudos to the groups of people responsible for this legislation. I've gotten 10 telephone calls today applauding the legislature for its effort in this area. Three were from executive directors of programs who said that their program cost as a result of methamphetamine has gone up by 100% in trying to meet the demands of this. And I further wanted to say, even though he's not here to hear it anymore, but our dear friend, former Judge Roosevelt Robinson, is considered the father of drug courts. And for our people to have worked so effectively in bringing a comprehensive system together is great. And the only thing, Senator Burdick, I'd like for you guys to be on top of, and that is when parents get into problems with methamphetamine and the Department of Human Services take the food stamps away, how are the kids going to continue to be fed? That's my only concern.
Should probably look at us.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Winters.
I want to also thank the Joint Committee on both the House and the Senate and the leadership of Senator Burdick and Krieger and all of those who were involved. I just have to say this is long overdue.
Yes, you've been talking.
Yeah, you know, I've been talking about this since 1999, and it's just, to me, for this session, legislative session, to come together in a bipartisan way, and I think that that's very, very critical that the citizens of the state can appreciate that it was both houses, both chambers, that took some 40-odd bills and worked them together. And it shows that we can, when we set our mind and our will to it, accomplish this. And I do want to thank the senators and the representatives who worked collaboratively to get this package out, because it really, truly has been long overdue. And it's unfortunate we had to wait until it was an epidemic before we started doing something very, very constructive. But your leadership shines, Senator Burdick, and I don't want to miss out anybody because there were so many people who were involved in doing this. And I think we all will leave this building very thankful, and the citizens of the state will be too.
Further discussion? Senator Bates and then Senator Gourley, if that's okay.
Just a quick comment. I'm not going to pile on what everybody else has said. I agree with them. Said 100%. It started in Southern Oregon in the mid-90s. The first time we realized we had a problem was when we tested pregnant women coming into the hospital for the deliveries, and 40% tested positive for methamphetamines in 95, 96, 97. We didn't believe our figures at that time and had to go back and repeat the study. Our ER has been swamped down there for a long time, but it didn't really affect the rest of society until the last 6 or 7 years when the level became so high. So, again, I appreciate now that it's spread to the rest of the state and is rapidly spreading eastward across the country that you've taken these first steps. Just one little word of caution. This is a great first step. I'm really, really happy to see this done. This is not going to stop the problem, but it's a first step. It's trying to control the problem. It'll raise public awareness because much of the public is still not aware of this. They know crime's up. They know there's problems, but they haven't seen it in their neighborhoods. But it's all around them. They just don't realize it. So it's a great first step. I appreciate it. My expectation is this will build a foundation in which we'll have to build on in our next session as we deal with this problem as it continues to grow. But it's a great first step, and I congratulate everybody involved in this legislation. Thank you.
Senator Gourley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the comments of Senator Bates about this being a first step and laying a foundation, because there are additional challenges out there in our communities. Let me just remind us that crack cocaine is also still with us. It is also a huge problem, and it can be argued that it's also a crisis of epidemic proportions. We've not found our way to address and have an impact on that that problem. So hopefully we will take our learnings from the strategy that has been crafted around methamphetamine, and we'll find our way to also deal with crack cocaine, which is having its own impact, own impact on a particular community in Oregon, which is a reflection of what's going on in the nation.
Very good. There's no further discussion. Are there any objections? Certainly not. So ordered. Senate Bill 907, a companion measure. Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Senate Bill 907 is the methamphetamine bill. It is the Senate component of the legislature's comprehensive meth package designed to provide a combined prevention, treatment, and punishment approach on this significant problem. Not only are individuals and their families personally harmed from the use of this drug, but it affects every citizen through increased child neglect, a rise in the number of property crimes, increased prison populations, and hazardous waste resulting from the manufacture of meth. Senate Bill 907 and its companion House bill are the result of months of work by a four-member bipartisan group of legislators. Specifically, Senate Bill 907 creates or modifies a number of crimes relating to the manufacture, possession, or distribution of meth and its precursors. Crimes related to arson are expanded to include fires and explosions resulting from the manufacture of meth. The seriousness level of the crimes of child neglect and mistreatment of a dependent are increased where meth and other controlled substances are manufactured. Courts are also authorized to suspend child visitation rights when a parent's abuse of a controlled substance may contribute to the harm of the child. Finally, the Department of Corrections is given the authority to alter its current alternative incarceration program to be more focused on substance abuse treatment. Funding relating to this bill is included in Senate Bill 5630. Resources are provided to the Department of Corrections for increased incarceration costs relating from the changes in this bill and for transitional housing and treatment for graduates of the department's alternative incarceration programs. The Department of Justice's District Attorney Assist Program is enhanced to provide additional assistance for investigation and prosecuting meth crimes. Finally, funds are directed to the Public Defense Services Commission for the anticipated increase in indigent defense services resulting from changes in this bill. I recommend Senate Bill 907A be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none? So ordered. Senate Bill 190A, relating to workers' comp coverage for home care workers, Senator Winters.
House Bill 190, as amended, permits the Home Care Commission created by Ballot Measure 99 in 2000 to elect workers' compensation coverage for home care workers who work in the state's Medicaid long-term care system and Oregon Project Independence. The measure also allows the termination of total disability benefits for home care workers who refuse modified employment when their physician or nurse practitioner has released them to perform this work. There is no fiscal impact from allowing but not requiring the Home Care Commission to elect workers' compensation coverage. This coverage falls under collective bargaining agreements, and the cost of coverage is anticipated in the Department of Human Services 2005-07 budget. Terminating temporary total disability benefits for those workers who have been released to perform modified work could result in lower home care workers' compensation premium costs, absent this change in Senate Bill 190. The subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 190 as amended be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you. Discussion. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to belabor the policy issue here, but I am curious as to what we have in place for a loss control program for essentially what amounts to 13,000 independent workers. If anyone is informed on that, briefly, not to go into great
detail. Get staff to come forward, please.
Mr. Chair and Senator Morris, I don't know the specific answer to that question. I'm sorry. This bill, though, does make a dent in that currently there is no provision, I guess, to terminate total disability benefits when a worker has been released. And this would make a change in that regard, and presumably dampen some of the premium growth into the future.
Thank you. I don't want to pursue it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A different venue.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Good question. Other discussion? Objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 1085A relating to medical marijuana. Senate Bill 1085A modifies medical marijuana statutes and creates new provisions. The measure's key provisions are the Department of Human Services is required to develop by administrative rule a medical marijuana grow site registration system, authorizing a registered grower to produce medical marijuana for up to 4 registered medical marijuana cardholders per year. DHS, Department of Human Services, is to develop a system by which law enforcement can verify registered growers and authorized grow sites. The measure creates a new crime of growing marijuana in a non-authorized site while exempting authorized medical marijuana growers from certain criminal statutes under specific conditions. DHS is required to create an 11-member advisory committee on medical marijuana. The measure allows a licensed healthcare professional to administer medical marijuana to a cardholder in a licensed healthcare facility. The measure was reported out by the Senate Rules Committee July 1st with a vote of 3 ayes and 1 no and 1 excused. The measure has a minimal fiscal impact. We recommend House Bill 1085A be reported out and due pass. Discussion.
A question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordley.
What is the makeup of the advisory committee?
Get staff to answer that. Thank you, Rick.
Chair Schrader, members, for the record, Rick Bercovian, committee administrator. The composition of the advisory committee are going to be primary stakeholders, including medical marijuana users or patients, advocates are the primary, and it's stated that composition is in the bill.
Further question? Senator Bates?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This will probably be for staff also. I'm a little concerned about this. The medical marijuana program we have in place now, which I have, as an example, I have several patients on, is working well. We have to be careful with it. I'm concerned that if we start opening this up too much, we're going to be in a position that people who are growing medical marijuana will be diverting it to other uses. What is the way of monitoring the growers that can grow marijuana for up to 4 other persons? Well, how is that going to be monitored and watched and made certain that that is not being diverted to other sources or other recipients?
Chair Schrader, Senator Bates, and members, the contents of the bill had gone through a number of long hearings with state police, district attorneys, medical marijuana users, Department of Human Services, and that was a key issue with especially law enforcement, that there were people who were growing and then growing additional for either their own recreational use and they weren't patients or diverting it. The method devised of actually issuing a grow site card, which must follow either the individual who grows it at his or her home or if the third party grows it for him, limits that grower to just 6 plants or X number of product of marijuana. If law enforcement does show up at a site, that card must be present, and the amount per patient cannot exceed that amount. In the past, that's been the bugaboo for law enforcement, is that they've never known how much marijuana was being grown at a site. This actually does restrict and tighten it down considerably. In fact, it was one of the key issues for law enforcement. They wanted that clear, bright line in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's my understanding. This actually strengthens law enforcement's ability to protect legitimate growers and restrict those that might be doing exactly what you were concerned about.
I just didn't want to jeopardize the program by opening up in a way that we got the program in trouble and we lose the whole program, because it's a program that's working extremely well right now for many patients, and we don't want to lose it. Thank you.
Good question. Further discussion? Seeing none, objections? Seeing none, so ordered. House Bill 2058A relating to health-related licensing boards. Someone going to help? Rick, Senator Devlin. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2058 creates separate accounts in the state treasury for 9 health...
health-related licensing boards, allows the interest earned on the accounts to be credited to the accounts, and allows the agencies to obtain financial services from the Department of Administrative Services instead of the Department of Human Services. The bill also continues the requirement that athletic trainers be licensed in Oregon by removing the sunset clause. The Dash A4 amendments resolve conflicts with Senate Bill 120 and House Bill 2065. I recommend House Bill 2058A be amended and reported out do pass as amended.
Very good. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none? So ordered. House Bill 2065A relating to State Board of Examiners for Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology. Again, Senator.
Always wanted to have a deeper voice, Mr. Chairman.
You do not, sir.
House Bill 2065A updates and clarifies provisions relating to the regulation of speech and hearing professionals. The revisions are needed to reflect national educational standards and strengthen the enforcement capabilities of the board examiners for speech, language, pathology, and audiology. The bill also allows the board to set fees through the administrative rule process. The board's 2005-2007 budget relies on proposed fee increases made possible by the passage of this bill. The Subcommittee on Education recommends House Bill 2065A be reported out due pass.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none? So ordered. House Bill 2112A relating to traffic safety education. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2112A increases the maximum amount allowable reimbursement to public school driver education providers from $150 to $210. The bill also requires public schools and facilities offering the course to adopt procedures for reduced or waived tuition for low-income pupils and admission policies for pupils from neighboring public schools. A $6 fee is collected on the issuance or renewal of a driver's license to finance reimbursement to public school driver education providers. The reimbursement rate was capped at $150 per student for those students who do not have a license prior to attending the driver education program. Schools cover the per pupil cost from three revenue sources: tuition charged to the student or parent, state reimbursement from the Department of Transportation, and then the balance is covered by local school funds. Only one or two programs are currently able to cover their costs from tuition and the state reimbursement. The Student Driver Training Fund has sufficient resources to absorb the $60 increase in reimbursement without an increase in fees. The higher reimbursement rate will help to maintain the current programs, particularly in rural areas. The Senate Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2112A be reported out to pass.
Thank you very much. Discussion? Senator Morris.
Just further explanation, Mr. Chair and committee members, it would take 10 years to exhaust the reserves at the suggested rate. So this is a very good bill.
Great bill. I would like to have had it when my kids were in school.
Yeah.
Seeing no further discussion, objections? Seeing none? So ordered. House Bill 2537A, relating to economic development. House Bill 2237A replaces the original bill and combines Senate Bill 152A and Senate Bill 680A into one bill. The new measure authorizes the state treasurer to issue lottery bonds in the amount of $10 million for payments of grants to the Coos County Airport District related to the construction of a passenger terminal facility at the North Bend Airport. This part of the bill was approved by the Senate Budget Special Committee on Budget and Senate on June 24, 2005. It has run into a little constitutional problem on the other side. The bill also requires the Department of Aviation to establish pilot programs at up to three rural airports, including the Aurora State Airport, to encourage the development of through-the-fence operations that Senator Johnson can give you a detailed rundown on, designed to promote economic development in the selected communities. The Senate Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee reviewed the fiscal impact statement and noted that the costs are not included in the Senate or House budget plan and will need to be considered in balancing the state budget. Subcommittee anticipates that the funding issue will be resolved when the bill moves through the House. Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2537A be reported out, due pass. Discussion. Senator Johnson.
Prior to the vote, I'd like to state for the record that a relative of mine is a through-the-fence operator at an airport in Oregon. That airport will not be eligible under this program.
Thank you. So noted. Further discussion? Objections? Seeing none, so ordered. House Bill 3124B relating to courts. Senator Winters.
House Bill 3124B is related to court filing fees and surcharges. This measure delays the effective date of the approximate 10% base filing fee increase authorized by Chapter 737, Oregon Laws 2003, from July 1, 2005 to January 1, 2007, and extends the temporary fees or surcharges authorized by Chapter 737, Oregon Law 2003, that was originally to sunset on June 30, 2005 to December 31, 2006. Revenues are deposited in the state general fund after the deduction of an Oregon Judicial Department administrative collection prorate. The directing of revenue to the general fund differs from 2003 to 2005 biennium, when revenue generated from a 30% filing fee surcharge was deposited into the OJD operating account. The collection of filing fees and surcharges under this measure applies only to the state circuit and appellate courts. Of additional note, this measure includes the provision of House Bill 2304, which raises fees charged by circuit courts for issuance of either a writ of execution or garnishment. The fee for each would increase from $4 to $7. The subcommittee recommends House Bill 3124B be reported out, be reported to pass.
Thank you very much, Senator. Discussion. Objection. Seeing none, so ordered. House Bill 3502B, relating to the State Fair, Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 3502B abolishes the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center, the Oregon State Fair Commission, and position of Director of Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center, transferring the duties to the State Parks and Recreation Department. The measure also provides for all monies and accounts to be continuously appropriated to the State Parks and Recreation Department to allow for operation and maintenance of the Oregon State Fair. Since 1997, the Oregon State Fair has experienced significant difficulty in meeting its operating and debt service requirements out of existing revenue. The Joint Ways and Means Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee reviewed the operation of the fair and made the following finding. 1. The fair and its management are isolated from state and local government partners. 2. The fair is not self-sufficient and will need funding support for the foreseeable future. 3. The fair needs assistance with agency management so that staff can focus on the statutory direction for the agency. 4. The fair needs a commission that is directly involved in the marketing and management of the fair. The chair of the House and Senate Special Committee on Budget determined that the best option would be to combine the fair with the Parks Department, since Parks had experience with managing state property, with providing entertainment, and with collecting revenue. In addition, the Parks has the resources to provide operational support to the fair. This is policy change for the state of Oregon, but is one that has been talked about for some time. The fair is a huge asset to the state of Oregon. The state fair could be so much more for Oregon than it is right now. This is an opportunity for the Parks Department to acquire an extremely unique property in the state of Oregon that represents Oregon's agricultural, artistic, and cultural heritage, and turn it into an urban park that would attract visitors not only from Oregon but from the nation. Subcommittee on Natural Resources recommends House Bill 3502-B be reported out, due pass.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, apologize to the chair for not noting this prior to the meeting. I do have some reservations about this bill. I will be an aye here in committee. I believe there's about a 98% chance I'll be an aye on the floor, but I still want to explore a couple of issues around this before I say for sure how I'm going to be voting on the floor.
Thank you for the advisement. Further discussion?
Senator Winter. Mr. Chair, as you know, this the fair is in Salem, and one that I worked on for a long time. I need to put on the record, because there's a lot of discussion about management and some of those issues. The fair has struggled for a lot of years, and it isn't just these past 2 years or the past 4 years. And I need to put that, because I do not want our staff, who have worked diligently to revitalize the fair, to any way think that we are indicting the work that we instructed them to do. The other piece of it, and I know Senator Courtney and I both co-chaired the task force, and we said then, just as we're saying now, that as policymakers, we need to make the decision whether or not we're going to support, in the state of Oregon, a fair.
whether or not we're going to support and maintain the property here in Salem, where we're going to have a place to celebrate Oregon. And I can't go without saying that we invested in the pavilion, and in our investment in the pavilion, because of not having totally all the resources at hand, we built the pavilion without giving all the money to put all the seats in. We have also, in the past, have not provided operational expenses out at the state fair. And I think it's that we need to fairly assess, as the landlords of the property, whether it is the state fair or whether it's other parts in the state, that we do have a responsibility for those properties, both in terms of maintenance. It wasn't until 2000, I believe it was 2001, that we actually provided the dollars with which to go out to fix up and maintain those buildings out there. We neglected our own responsibility. So I'm very reluctant on this, because I also think that we have to step up and admit that as landlords and as policymakers, the decision that we make with respect to agencies and the policies that we say to them. None of us expected 9/11. None of us expected what would happen after 9/11 and its economic impact, not only for state fairs, but other entertainment venues in this state. And if you understand the entertainment business, you will understand that across this country of ours, that the majority, that I don't know any of them that were successful as they try to climb out of what happened after 9/11. And I would hope you keep these kinds of things in your mind as you talk about not only the fair, but other venues. I know our Oregon Gardens is struggling. You know, as we look around this state and look at where we have made investments, particularly those that have to do with the entertainment field, we have to be mindful whether or not we're going to continue to support them or that investment. Senator Courtney and I truly believe that we do have to have a place to celebrate Oregon, that we do have a place that feeds from our local communities into a statewide venue, to where people can be proud of what goes on in this state of ours, this great state of ours. And it was for those reasons that, if I recall last session, that we invested and made those investments in the pavilion and made those investments to begin to revitalize the state fair so that it can be used on a statewide basis. But I have to put that on record, because I don't want our staff, our personnel, to go to think that in some way what we're doing here today sends a signal that they did not work extremely hard during this economical downturn in this state to make the pavilion work. This morning we saw in the paper over 1,000 Airstream individuals were coming to the state fair. That kind of advanced planning doesn't happen in one day. Those are long-range plans that in the entertainment field that you have to do in advance. And so I need to say that as we wrestle with this. And I, like my good Senator Devlin, you know, have some real concerns about what we're doing. But I also know that we've got to find a way that we don't come back every 2 years to deal with this particular issue.
Very good. Thank you. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to compliment the Senator Winters for her very articulate case statement for the state fair. There have been members that have suggested that we don't need a state fair. And I would like to remind the colleagues on this panel and others in the building, as you then communicate with them, that there is a provision, a legal agreement, that reverts a major portion of that fair property that actually bisects through buildings, that if the state chooses to drop the state fair and discontinue, that property reverts to Marion County. So you're left with not only the bond debt, you're left with a very truncated piece of property that would be extremely difficult to create value in. the discussion that we had, that Senator Berger and I had, meeting with Tim Wood, State Parks, and the commission chair, was to try to challenge them to think in terms of our parks are typically rural, and they're along the coast and the Cascades, and they're in beautiful venues, to think in terms of what we can do with an urban park and take that asset that's a huge piece of property in its prime location, to think in terms of how we can translate that into an urban park and build on that asset that we have that reinforces the state fair, it reinforces the activity, it draws things into that location, and look at it in a wholly new and different way. And I think this is an opportunity to challenge the Parks Department to take that asset and with the Parks management or the State Fair management and create something that we don't now have that's better. So, Mr. Chair, I think this is a reasonable move and one that is necessary.
Thank you. Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, just a final comment. Personally, I've always been supportive of the State Fair and been supportive of appropriations for the State Fair.
You ever been to the State Fair?
Yes, like quite a few times. In fact, I've been one of those few legislators. I've been one of those few legislators that has volunteered for the meet.
Couldn't find it, right?
Wait a second, Mr. Chairman. I've been one of those few legislators that has volunteered for the Meet Your Constituents, and I've done that a number of years, and I've become so good that even though I very rarely meet more than one or two constituents, I've been very good at developing.
Put that on the record, sir.
Yes, I've been very good at the State Fair. I've been very good at actually developing, knowing where directions are at the State Fair, because that's why people come to the booth, is to ask you for directions.
Yes, sir.
But with that, though, I do think the State Fair fulfills a very important purpose.
Yes.
And but I do also think that if State Parks does assume the State Fair, one of the things onus that should be on them, and this is nothing relative to the current management. I think the current management has done a superb job under the conditions that they've been under. But I think it's also incumbent on them to find more ways to generate revenue from the facility. And they just don't get transferred over to the parks and get put on the dole, so to speak. That they find more ways to generate revenue from that particular parcel of property, and I think that's probably doable.
I think that's part of the plan. Senator Westland, you have a comment, sir?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to query the panel as to how many of these good fair supporters have had the Grand Champion Hereford Bull as well as Grand Champion Allbreed's Bull at the fair?
I thought all of us did. Declaring conflict of interest. Thank you.
Well, and also, to mirror...
some of us have been...
Mr. Chair, I know Bull want to hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, to mirror Senator Devlin's earlier comments, I am reluctant to vote against this bill. However, I will do so, but I sort of notice there's a 2% chance, at least a 2% chance, I will be a yes on the floor.
Thank you. Further discussion. This is a very good bill. I know it's controversial in many people's eyes, but I think it's been said it's time to put up or shut up with our State Fair. We've been living day-to-day on this, and I know from my experience in Waste Means, most, if not all, other states that have a viable state fair support it with tax dollars in one form or another. We also have unique opportunity with line games, good, bad, or indifferent, bringing in an exceptional amount of money that was not anticipated in our parks budget. And I can think of no better use to bring urban and rural America together in a heritage park, which is part of the mission of the state parks. So I think this is an admirable task. I'd like to congratulate LFO for coming forward with this idea with Senator Morris and Senator Verger and others. And I just think it's very creative and thoughtful. And one of the things that, while it's controversial, is the type of legislation that befits the people of the state of Oregon in this body. Further discussion. Senator Bates.
Just one last comment. This debt is not going to go away, and this is a way of dealing with that debt. If you lose the fair, you lose a revenue stream that has a possibility of paying that debt back. As that revenue stream improves, and if management can bring more of a take more profit to it, we'll relieve that. For those of you who don't think that the fair is important, there was a very long article in National Geographic last year that highlighted state fairs across the nation, and the role of state fairs in bringing a state together was one of the points that, and most of those state fairs are now heavily supported by state government. They don't stand on their own. They can't.
Mr. Chair, just two things. One is the, because I think it's important that you also continue to have a voice from the community, particularly that voice that has always been there for the state fair. You have an advisory committee, and I would encourage the Parks and Recs to continue to have that input from the county fairs and those. Senator Morris raised a very, very, very important point, and that was the land there. And I hope that wasn't missed, because that is a provision that states very clearly, if there is no longer a fair out there on those grounds, that land that was donated reverts to the county. So as we talk about these issues, that's a legal issue that has been there for a lot of years, and it's still there, has not been removed, and it's not been granted to the state. So I just reinforce the good senator's comment. We've grappled with that couple years ago, and I hope that the Parks and Recs also keeps that in mind when we talk about the future of the state fair.
Further discussion? Seeing none, I'd like to thank Senator Carter and Representative Morgan for beating the heck out of Representative Scott and Senator Schrader, making this a possibility. It's approved. We are adjourned.